Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Thunder Magic Sacks, because this format goes boom! I'm so hyped about this format.
It's just amazing. The energy that you're bringing on this Sunday morning is incredible. It's palpable, it's tangible, and I'm hoping that by the end of it, that it has seeped into my veins as well.
Wait, you're not about this format?
I'm not. I don't see what you see yet. I'll tell you that much. I think this format seems fine. It has. I mean, I'm remembering you liked Lord of the Rings a lot more than I did. It reminds me of Lord of the Rings, like a lot, which makes sense. It's heavy IP, but like at the core of it, I feel like a lot of that heavy IP stuff then reveals a pretty like, I don't know, nuts and boltsy kind of limited environment. Is my take so far, but that I'm going to be quite tempered. I'm going to leave the hotness to you, and the coolness will be over on this side of the microphone.
Okay, I'll heat you up, baby. Don't you worry.
So we are coming off the heels of early access for Final Fantasy on Wednesday into Thursday, and then pre-releases on Friday, and for other folks on Saturday. The people out there who are like, I'm on pre-release one of four. I'm like,
the real heroes.
Godspeed, the real heroes out there. And I did hear that like this set is selling like way like more than like a lot of stores that are having like. Oh, they're overselling or whatever, and then they're having to buy from other stores. So I don't know. This might actually be the hit that Wizards is hoping with this crossover.
Yeah, I went to my LGS to pre-release 5-0, no big deal. Won the pre-release. Shout out to all my opponents and game nights in Jasper. But I tried to buy a play booster box for Vegas so that we would have like packs to draft or whatever, or to do some seals with my brother to practice. None. They have no extras that aren't like sold through pre-orders.
Whoa. Uh-oh. Okay. Well, we're gonna have to get on that before Vegas because we shouted this out at the end of the episode last week. We should start front loading it here. Vegas in 2 weeks, and we're not only going to be doing our live show on Friday at 5:30, but I think it's now going to be official. We're doing a draft and greet on Friday day leading up to it. I know the link I put was broken, so that's a mea culpa on me. But we'll put another link in the episode this week. If you're going to Vegas, if you want to sign up for those. But also, it's just going to be there. And now it looks like we'll have some sanctioned tables and plenty of space. 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. are the draft times. Bring some packs of Final Fantasy. Get to spell sling with us. Very, very excited about that. But I guess we got to go get some packs now. To provide for ourselves for those drafts.
Those are the rules. You got to show up with three packs for the drafts. I have seven packs that I won for winning my pre-release. So I'm set. I've got my sets of three packs.
You're all set. Sick brags about winning your pre-release. Well, let's take care of a little housekeeping other than Vegas, and then we'll dive into our updated format thoughts after getting our hands on the cards this week. So first things first, got to shout out our Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. Now is the time to get in on the Patreon because you get access to our Lords of Limited Discord, which I know we say it, but it is hopping. It is popping. It is 24/7 limited tech support, and new set season is the time to get in on the Discord because it just explodes. Like everybody's got their new drafts, their hot takes for the format. They've got their tier lists all set up. We're doing some practice drafts in the Discord with folks, and that's nice to see. And then the set's going to drop on Tuesday, the day after this episode goes live. And that's a great time to be able to just sort of bounce ideas off of other people, see what's winning. I know the trophy section is going to be what I'll be checking a lot just to see, okay, what's winning? What are the consistent things that we're seeing? And then the other thing we want to shout out is our podcast feed, which gets you access not only to this episode a day early ad-free, but also access to our bonus weekly episode of Lords Unlimited. And of course, we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they joined. So this week, we're welcoming Raymond, John, Andreas, Chris, Aaron, Paul, Matthew, Romanisti, Dave is my hero, Ben, and Lionel. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, I cannot say thank you enough. We were so close to Ben is my hero. We were just one off.
I knew as I was typing this, I knew you were going to be jonesing for the Ben is my hero. I'm sure if you work hard enough, you might get one for next week. You might get a Ben is my hero for next week.
Listen, listeners, you can do it for me.
The power's in your hands. So talk to me about some broad format thoughts. You 5-0'd your pre-release. How many early access drafts did you get to do?
6 early access drafts. I stayed up until 3 a.m. early access night. So I played, I taught lessons that day, did a couple drafts before I had to leave for rehearsal an hour away, drove to rehearsal, got home from rehearsal at like 10:30 p.m. and played until 3 a.m., woke up, played some more. Premiere drafts were still live the next morning. I never switched to quick draft, which was sick. I wouldn't have stayed up till 3 a.m. if I knew that. But I did a bunch of drafting on early access day, and it's awesome. I am stoked about this format. I think it's early to say this, but I think it's got some all-timer vibes for me. And I know what I like from a format, and this is it. Like, it made me think of, I was trying to think what I liked about the format. It made me think of that article you wrote for Cardsphere back in the day about like the 8 whatever characteristics of a good limited format. I think Final Fantasy hits a lot of those boxes. It's high synergy decks that are way better than the sum of their parts. And when you do the synergy thing, I think it's the best thing to be doing. Like, the synergy outclasses the power level for the most part of the best individual cards. I think there are lots of powerful cards. Like, the packs aren't empty. You're going to be able to, I think, find a lane, especially if you delay the decision and you navigate to an open lane. I love the draft format asking me to bob and weave during the draft because I think that's what I'm best at. And I think this format asks that of you. Like, starting red-black with 3 good red-black cards and holding on for dear life if your neighbor is drafting red-black ain't going to do it the way it did in Cons of Tarkir or Dragonstorm. So, here for that, the lands are good, the towns are good, but you actually have to spend picks on them. It's not like Tarkir Dragonstorm where, you know, you're just going to get willy-nilly fixing everywhere. There's like a bit of tension there in picking the towns. There's premium interaction from cards like Thunder Magic. Ice Magic is a big mover up for me after early access. And I think holding those removal spells for the rares is like a nice throwback to limited. Like, you're not just incentivized to rapid fire off your removal, I don't think, necessarily. And then timing that interaction as well, whether it's for a key rare or when your opponent goes to re-equip or things like that. I think you really get rewarded for landing your interaction in key spots in the gameplay. There's sideways build arounds that really get there, like the legendary stuff. There's a bunch of life gain things in white. Right. It's like, is this going to work? And like, yes, it does. And when the answer to those types of questions are like, can I do a sideways build around and does it meet the power level threshold of the format? If the answer to that's yes, the format just has so much more longevity. And I think currently for me, the answer to that is yes, that the sideways build aroundy stuff gets there. There's a wide range of deck speed. There's the hyper aggro. There's the equipment, the job select stuff. There, I had a deck with the White Wrath and Bahamut during early access, and I just naturally hit 9 land drops and cast some Bahamuts. Whoa. During early access. And I think even overarchingly, the gameplay is very interactive, and there's a lot of push and pull thanks to the Saga creatures. The Saga creatures are just very interesting, and I really enjoyed playing with them.
Can we dial in on those? Because that was a big question mark going into this set, I think, and now that we've got a chance to get our hands on them, you know, those were some of the cards that we shouted out as some top cards last week, some cards that we disagreed on quite a bit, and wanted to sort of put a pin in to see, do you have some, you know, more solid opinions about how the Saga creatures played out?
Yeah, I think they're interesting in a couple senses. I think they lead you to want to be proactive. Like, I do think the format rewards proactivity. And I think if there's a knock on the format, it's going to be that it's a little on the faster side and a little on the snowballier side. Like, if the person on the play, if they get their synergy going, it can hit super hard. But the fact that the Saga creatures only stick around for a couple of attacks, they do want you to be playing offense, I think, rather than defense for the most part, especially if you've got a lot of them. So you think about something like Summon Fat Chocobo. That's the 4 and a green 4/4. It ETBs, makes a 2/2 Chocobo. And then chapters 2, 3, and 4, your creatures gain trample until end of turn. Or something like Summon Chocomog, which is one we both like the Fat Chocobo. You, I think, like Chocomog a little more than I do. 2 and a white for the 3/3, and the first 4 chapters are other creatures you control get +1/+0. Both of those cards are significantly better if you are the offensive player than the defensive player. And I think the synergistic nature of the format also leads you to want to be proactive. So I think between the synergy and between the summons, you are rewarded for being proactive. But I think the Saga creatures specifically, there are 2 different categories in my mind. There's the bombs that you have to kill on sight. Like, you just can't let them get to the second and third chapters, or you're going to be significantly far behind. And then there's ones where you can like kind of finesse a little bit, and depending on the game state, sometimes you can make your opponent waste a card or half of a card. And if you can wait them out, you do kind of get an edge in the game. And I really like that.
Yeah. Just to check in on where we're at with those specific cards you shouted out. I'm meeting you, I think, where you were on Chocomog. No longer in my top commons, because I do think that the danger of that card, and it's a danger for all of them, which is why I think your framing or how you were thinking about them last week as spells first with something else, like it's nicer to think about that because then you know you're getting some amount of cards of value and then a creature that sticks around for a little bit. And so even something like Fat Chocobo, where like maybe it doesn't have attacks, but it's also holding the ground for a few turns and you get the 2/2 token, can kind of sometimes be enough. Chocomog, you can just straight up blank because it doesn't have a spell effect attached to it.
Right. Yeah. So I think you do have to be, there's deck building considerations for sure. Fat Chocobo, though, I think is just good. That one's just a good five drop creature.
I agree. But like, but not, again, not impossible to, you know, if you have a 6/6 in play, not impossible to feel like you get to blank that. Or like, you know, I was watching I didn't get to do a ton of early access myself, only did 3 drafts. But I was trying to watch as much as I could. And there was a game I was watching. Reed Duke ended up winning this game still, but he had a couple of Fat Chocobos in play that were blanked. He wasn't really able to attack. But the flip side was it was also able to hold off some attacks from his opponent because they didn't want to then open the window for a 4/4 trampler to come back on the crackback, you know?
Yeah, like they sometimes have this weird effect on the game, like two fighters circling each other.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Who's going to go in for the jabs? Like you're feeling out your opponents. That's kind of what happens in the gameplay. But so those two categories of like the ones that you can't ignore. For example, a lot of the rare ones, you just have to kill on sight. So there's Summon GF Cerberus, which is, I assume, Girlfriend Cerberus. 2 red for a 3/3. And chapter 1, you surveil 1. Chapter 2, you copy your next instant sorcery spell that you cast and could choose new targets. Chapter 3, you double copy your next instant sorcery spell that you cast, which is wild. So this card, you have to kill before it gets to the second chapter. Like, you're just highly incentivized to snap it off. And that's where holding your removal and timing out your removal is so important. If you snap this off after the first chapter, you're fine. If you have removal the next turn, you're good. If you don't, you're in significant trouble.
Yeah. And then there are some that you can blank, but even those, like even the ones you have listed here, I mean, Chocomog, you can blank. Fenrir, the green uncommon that lets you search up a basic chapter 1, chapter 2, the next creature spell you cast gets an additional +1/+1 counter. And then chapter 3 lets you draw a card if you control the creature with the greatest power or tied for the greatest power. I mean, you're always getting rampant growth plus a chump block off of this, right?
Right. I mean, it's still very good, but it's not the way GF Cerberus is. Like, it's a very good value card, but you can mitigate how good it is for your opponent depending on how you choose to play. Like, if you can get a bigger creature than them and wait 2 turns, you know, you're in fine shape depending on when it comes down. It's most backbreaking when it comes down on turn 3 because it's hard to have a bigger creature than them at that point. Mm-hmm. But later in the game, sometimes this isn't backbreaking, and it really rewards knowing where you are in the game state and how you can pace the game to try to mitigate the value of your opponent's Summon Fenrir.
Yeah, I agree.
But sometimes you can't. And you know, sometimes it's not always that you, like with Chocomog, for example, sometimes you don't always have a 4/4 to blank it. So you have to decide, like, can I take 6 over the next 2 turns and then let it die to keep my creature around? Is it worth taking 6 damage just to not trade my 3/3 with their Chocomog? And knowing the answers to those questions is really important. That's I think, the thing that I like most about the gameplay is this format really rewards what I'm best at, which is planning multiple turns in advance and seeing the big picture of the game. I feel like the summons really lend itself to viewing the game in that manner.
Because if you're going to cast it, you kind of want to have an idea of what the next 3 or 4 turns are going to look like, because that might influence if you actually want to land it now or not. Like, okay, I'm going to cast this. But I'm actually just going to end up trading off my GF Cerberus for their 3-2 because I'm behind. Then maybe I want to pick a different window for it.
Yes.
So zooming out from what we were trying to predict from last week, I'll ask in a general sense if there were anything that surprised you or how you felt about your impressions that we laid out last week going into getting your hands on the card. Did you feel like, I was able to do what I laid out for myself and feel successful? Or were there any pivots you felt like you had to make?
I think generally, if I had to grade our format trues, I would give us like an A- on our format trues. Like, I think we gave a good picture of the format. I still think it's a high synergy format. I think the premium removal is great, but you don't want too much removal, because if you're packing too much removal, it's just so hard to combat the job select decks because you don't want to spend your removal on their 1/1 token. So I feel good about that. I think we largely nailed it in framing the format of Jeskai synergy versus Sultai power. I think those are the two poles. I think Sultai power is a little bit better than I was giving it credit for last week. But I think ultimately even that is reductive compared to how I'm seeing the format right now. So I think there's like Naya Chocobo's decks, and I don't think that's tier one necessarily, but they're definitely there and they definitely work when they're open. There's Grixis spells decks between like the blue red spells decks works. The red black mages deck works. I saw some sweet Esper artifact lists, like, you know, base white blue splashing some of the black artifact rares or things like that. White has, you know, what it's doing in the job select decks in white red and white blue, that sort of thing. But it also has really cool sideways build arounds that work in life gain and legends. So I see the format as just this giant playground right now. And it mostly all felt like it worked to me during early access, which is awesome. Like, I am so here for this format. I think ultimately, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe a couple things are less good than the other things, but ultimately I do feel very confident that regardless of what the ranking ends up being, you're going to have to read what's open for your seat. And just doing what's open for your seat is going to be way better than trying to jam your way into whatever the data says the best archetype is.
Yeah, specifically, I think the Chocobos impressed. That would be my one, like, I think I was sort of viewing red-green and green-white as, hey, maybe they're not so synergistic, but you're probably just going to get some good creatures on rate and be able to curve out and beat down with those decks. And I think that's true, but the Chocobos themselves impressed me more than I was expecting. Like, they're often to whatever, 2-mana 3/2s, like Ghassal Greens, the green common spell that's 2-mana, make a Chocobo with flashback 7, called the Mountain Chocobo, like all the flashback spells that make them, the incidental ways like Fat Chocobo, and then the sort of cool, like individual synergy with Landfall to get them to be consistently 3/2s on your turn. I was impressed by those creatures.
Yeah, I've seen them beat down hard. Like, yeah. I faced a red green beatdown deck that was quite good. That was Chocobo Landfall.
There's that green uncommon that flips if you have 4 birds. It's like a 2-mana enchantment makes a Chocobo and then flips and then basically doubles those Landfall triggers. What I didn't realize was that Fat Chocobo is itself a bird. And so it is a bird and then makes a 2/2 bird. And so that's, You're halfway there to flipping it. And then it's giving the things trample. The enchantment that cares about all the birds is flipping and doubling the Landfall. And so sending in for like, I don't know, 16, 18 points of trample the following turn was quite impressive. And that's non-rare. That's
the side quest, right? Side quest plays a Chocobo or something?
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
that card's good.
But all the other stuff you're talking about, like the overlap between the blue-red and red-black non-creature spell stuff, the Esper artifacts, which is largely just white blue grabbing what black offers that at its best. And then, I'm getting inklings of the white legends from Lord of the Rings, like with Blitzball and white having some cards that care about legends. I am getting some excitement there. I feel like that's going to derail some of my drafts. I was talking to someone in Discord earlier this week, and I was like, I feel like I just need to like make it to week 3 drafting responsibly, and then that will be a big win, and then I can go off the rails a little bit with this set.
Speaking of going off the rails, I have gotten Aether out of my system. Holy cow, that card is atrocious. It's so bad.
Aether, that's the 3 in a blue artifact.
Oh no, I have the wrong card. Elixir is what I meant. Elixir is atrocious. I've gotten that out of my system. So that's the one mana artifact that comes into play tapped, and you can pay 5, tap it to shuffle your graveyard into your library. I jammed it into several early access decks, and I started with it in my pre-release sealed deck because I was green-black self-mill, and I was like, wow, maybe I'm going to need this to shuffle my graveyard back in. You don't need it to shuffle your graveyard back in. It is. I will be playing it still, but it is not good.
This is a do as I say, not as I do kind of card. Summer's here, which means it's time to officially let the dogs out. And by the dogs, we mean your legs. If your pups have been stuck in your jeans or sweats for the last few months, set them free with the Lined Swim Collection from Chubbies.
Life's too short for uncomfortable swim trunks. These babies are set up for all-day comfort with a quick-dry stretch fabric and built-in liner that actually does its job.
Their different styles for swim trunks are awesome, legit. I was excited by a number of them, but when I came upon the zigzaggers, I knew that that was the pair for me. For any of my Tim Robinson fans out there, it's a very complicated Dan Flashes pattern.
And the Chubbies original stretch shorts can practically live on your legs. Available in long, short, and way short, they come with a relaxed fit, elastic wake span, and no fuss design.
I'm going to be rocking my shorts in Vegas. How about you?
You better believe it. So don't wait. For a limited time, shop Chubbies' biggest sale of the year for $45 shorts and up to 65% off select gear.
Hit up chubbiesshorts.com and grab your favorites before they're gone.
Miss the sale? Don't sweat it. Use our exclusive code LOL for 20% off. Support the show, let them know we sent you when the survey asks, and get ready to turn some heads.
Summer's here, dress like it in Chubbies. And now back to the show. My pool was weak sauce. I built two decks. I built, like, I think the better of my two decks was green-white, just beats. And then the other deck I built was sort of red-black splashing blue, or no, red-blue splashing black for a couple, for a rare and a mythic. And I had tons of velocity in that deck. I was playing a card we argued about on Lords Unlimited last week, the Triple Triad, the 3 red-red-red enchantment. That card is, I won't say definitively what it was quite bad for me. So that's where I'm at right now with it. But in that deck, I ran Elixir because I was like, oh, I'm going to be going through my deck a lot. I shuffled in 13 cards, gained 13 life, still lost the game. And lost the game normally, but also because of Triple Triad, I think I would have decked again prior to my opponent, even after reshuffling 13 non-lands into my deck.
That sounds like you need better cards, friend. That sounds like you need better cards.
It was a rough pool. It was a rough pool. That's all I'm going to say. It did not make me excited about dropping whatever 150 to do the PTQ in Vegas. I was like, oof, if these sealed pools can look like this, it'll be tough.
Yeah, the problem with Elixir is that it doesn't cantrip. If it cantripped, I think it would be okay.
Or the problem is that at 5 mana, activation is so much. Like, can you make it cheaper? It's not drawing me a card. Could at least be 2 mana to do so I could do something else that turn.
I tried in early access to have the blue white rare that at your end step when you gain life your opponent mills. I tried to do like an Elixir mill deck with that card during early access.
Does it mill equal to the amount of life you gained?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's juicy.
That's exciting. It's juicy. I never got to pull it off, but it was in my White Wrath Bahamut deck that I referenced earlier.
Nice.
Okay, so back to the defining features of this format. I think if we're talking gameplay, it's on the faster / more powerful side. But I've been reading the Discord a lot, and it seems like there are people who are not on that wavelength. It feels pretty clearly very powerfully synergistic to me. I think you can play slow decks. There's a lot of ways to gain life, and I do think you need life gain if you want to play slow, because the red-black mages deck just has so much reach. After putting pressure on you, the problem with playing against the red-black deck, and I haven't played with it yet, but I've played against it a bunch, and I was pretty consistently playing against it at 5 wins, 6 wins, whatever, you know, like it was in the top of the later ends of the drafts. Is they put pressure on you and get you down to like 8. And if they're ahead, it's really hard for you to pressure them. But then they also still have the mages sitting there that are draining your life total. Red-black mages is tough, I think.
I agree. I had the same experience. Did not get to play it myself, but faced it and had that same feeling. We're like stabilizing with big air quotes at 8 or 6 feels atrocious because you're like, I can't spend removal on your 0/1, but I know that's the thing that's killing me, because if I spend removal, I need to spend removal on these other actual threats, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like Tunbury, for example, is awesome for red black. Because you get it down on turn one, it's got like the 2/2 first strike death touch or 2/1 first strike death touch, whatever it is on your turn. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, that gets in for 6/8 damage, and then you do some other damage, and then like it's kind of game over from there. So there's ways to gain life. There is defensive speed in the format. Like, I don't want to say it's only aggro and attacking, but I do think proactivity and getting your synergy online quickly is rewarded. Like, there are some serious synergistic combos that hit hard.
The one, so I usually try to just like limit myself to 5 games in my early access drafts before redrafting, but I don't really have that luxury this time around. So I got deep with the decks that I had. And the one draft that I had that was a trophy was it was mostly mono white and then had a few red cards. But I had choices throughout the draft. Like, it played out as I thought. Like, I was going to get deep. I got deep into white and then had basically 2 to 3 options of, I could pair it with these 4 green cards or these 5 red cards or these few blue cards, and then figuring out what was the best support for my heavy white equipment deck. And it played out how I expected. Like, I'm still pretty high on job select. The weapons vendor, though, that's the 3 and a white 2/2 ETB draw card. And then at the beginning of combat, you can pay 1 to move an equipment. That card was excellent and was exactly what you described it being, like a real like key for the white equipment decks. And part of it is like my opponents picked them off, which like can't have felt great for them. Like,
right, because it's already cantripped. Yeah.
But it also, it impacted me. I was like, I actually wanted that because like some of the equipment, I mean, the equip 4 and equip 5 and even equip 6, if you're talking about the +2/+2 reach common, like, those are hefty costs, and you just feel like you are cheating when you use the weapons vendor to re-equip those. And especially the red uncommon, the samurai one, that's +2/+2 trample and haste. Getting to re-equip that for free after you've played, or for 1, which is effectively free, after you've played a fresh creature pre-combat with the weapons vendor, or even getting to give the weapons vendor itself +2/+2 trample and haste the turn it comes into play, is big game. But my whole point, or the point I'm trying to circle here about white, is that it's aggressive, but also a lot of games turned into, or not a lot of games, I don't have a lot to talk about with anything, but some number of games devolved into these re-equip wars.
Grindfest, yeah.
With hero tokens where you're just like, I slap a white mage's wand and a white mage's wand, and I'll attack you for 3 and I'll gain 2. And then you're like, great, cool. And I'll equip my white mage's wand and my knight thing, and I'll hit you for 4 and gain 1. And just like, you're just top decking for whatever body you can get. And then you are dumping your 6, 7, 8 mana into your equipment to then build them up. So it's not like, yes, you're getting on board and proactive, and perhaps it's a little snowbally, but that's not to say that it can't grind out as well.
Yeah, I think the most snowbally deck is red-black. That's the one that can get out of hand in a hurry. And also, like, red-green chocobos can also do some dumb stuff where it hits hard. I had a sweet Red Mage's Rapier deck where I attacked for 14 in a turn with 2 Red Mage's Rapiers. Like, there's a lot of cards that are synergistically way better on offense than they are at anything else.
Red Mage's Rapier is an interesting one to touch in on. That's the one in a red job select, and it sort of gives like pseudo prowess to the thing. Whenever you cast a non-creature, it gets +2/+0 until end of turn, and it has a re-equip cost of 3. We argued about that last week. Where are you at on it? Still feeling good about it in red-blue and red-black, or just red-black?
Red-blue and red-black is where it's best, but it's also synergistic with itself. Red, like Red Mage's Rapier wants you to have more copies of Red Mage's Rapier.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I was noticing, there's like a, I think it's an uncommon that lets you give 2 things +2/+0 until end of turn. And I was thinking, I was like, oh, with Red Mage's Rapier, you cast that, you crack in for 10 on 2 of those puppies.
Correct.
So not nothing.
Also a card that impressed both of us that we are not going to decide is good yet, but Sahajin, which is 1 and a blue for the 1/3. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, if at least 4 mana is spent to cast it, you put a +1/+1 counter on it and it can't be blocked. This loves wearing a Red Mage's Rapier in blue-red.
Well, so I am kind of, you have in our show notes, you were impressed by this also, but I feel like this is Snowmelt Stag 2.0, which is fair. We definitely want to just keep ourselves a little bit in check this time around. But there was so many people in the Discord also talking about being impressed by this card in early access that, like, I don't know. It's not just the Lords of Limited, aka Ethan and Ben Echo Chamber with this card. Because it's a card that I like came in and I was like, this can't be good, right? And just part of what it does and what blue gets to do, which I guess I didn't quite see because I was so job select pilled. So there's Sahagin, and then there's blue has another really good defensive two drop.
The 1/4 that when you have seven lands, it turns into a 4/4.
Right. So blue gets two of these things that are normally bad, like a Dune Beetle, like a 2-mana 1/4 vanilla is not good. And this 2-mana 1/3, these are not good. Because what they like, yeah, sure, maybe they let you hold off some defenses, but then once the game goes long, they're largely irrelevant for you and you need other things to turn the corner. Sahagin and the 2-mana 1/4 that lets you attack or can attack as a 4/4 when you have seven lands, both present pretty formidable offensive threats once you've stabilized and held the ground. Like, I was definitely feeling like, okay, this 1/4 isn't a problem for me early, but I want the game to go long. I can't attack through it because it's a 1/4 on the ground. So I was impressed by both of those cards.
Yeah, I agree. I think the gameplay is really good in the format. I think it's going to be leaning on the quicker synergistic side, but I think it's all there. And to your point about the re-equip stuff being able to grind, I had a baller green-black deck with just signposts galore. I had double of each of the meld cards, and I had the 3/3 flyer that, you know, gives minus X, minus X, equal number of things in your graveyard. I had double of the other signpost that gains you three. Like, green-black was wide open. Could have backed a pickup truck into the lane for green-black. And I played against a red-white equipment deck that was just a ho-hum normal red-white equipment deck, and it ground with me. I mean, like, I eventually won, but my deck was grindy, and it was grinding with me. So, I mean, I like I said, I think it all works. I think the archetype that I was most impressed with was green-black. I think that is a premier archetype in the format.
That sounds right, and like one of the questions for it, because we identified the two signposts, especially the 5-mana 3/3 flyer that then gives minus X to something when it enters equal to the number of permanents in your graveyard. Like, we were like, okay, this is one of, if not the best, multicolor uncommon. But it's a two-sided coin where, like, if your signposts are great, you also have to have the support. Or, like, if the support's there but the signposts aren't great, it's a little left to be desired. But it sounds like your experience was, no, both were great. Like, the support is there and the signposts are really good.
Well, and the other key piece, those are both true, but it also gets just incidental life gain everywhere, right? There's the black 2/3 common that mills three and gains three. That's super important against the red-black decks. The gold uncommon, that's the 3/3 that gains three on ETB.
Yep.
That's super important against the red-black decks. It's just all there. Yeah, I think that archetype hits big. But before we get into like color stuff and archetype hot takes that I will be participating in, you can excuse yourself. the rares, I just want to touch in on the rares. There are great rares, like great rares. But there's, like we said, leading into the format, there's almost always a turn to interact with them. And I think the cards that have moved down for me a lot are the flip rares. They're way less good than I would have thought. Like, they represent powerful things, but oftentimes if your opponent plays a flip rare and it's not Dion, like, Dion is dumb. The white one, the 3 and a white 3/3 that makes it 2/2.
Yeah.
That one's ridiculous. But many of the flip rares have a steep activation cost and you can blow them out on activation. So you can basically never flip them into open mana from your opponent, because if you get blown out there, it's game losing. And then there's also windows where you have time to interact with them. Like, you can interact with them the turn they come down. You can interact with them when your opponent tries to flip with them. And there's often a 1 or 2 turn window before they flip back too. I'm talking about the ones that have activation costs to flip, to be specific. There are some others where you just have to meet conditions, and a lot of those are good. The thing that impressed me the most were the Saga rares. Like, it's just so hard to not get 2-for-1 initially and then still have to deal with it immediately. They just put so much pressure on the game, on your opponent when they come down.
Did you happen to see the one of the ones we had a question about on Lords Unlimited last week was the 5-mana 7/7 trample saga that mills 5 and then puts all the lands from your yard into play and then gives something +X/+X and trample equal to your lands? Did you see that one at all?
My opponent cast it against me once and I had the removal spell for it. It was fine. Okay. Because chapter one was I had the one turn window to answer it and I answered it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because that doesn't quite have any TB, but the ones that do have like chapter one, this is a 1-for-1 effect are so hard to not like feel like you're up against it in terms of a resource war.
Yeah, and like and that's the other thing that green black gets to do is it gets to rebuy the saga creatures over and over and over. Like the good ones, and it gets to mill to find them. Green black. Mm-hmm. Such a good deck.
Lights up, yeah.
So removal, we've talked about it a little bit, but just to really dial it home, you got to have interaction for those rares or for the gold uncommons that are key. I think 3 to 4 pieces of interactions ideal. If you can get to where your removal's synergistic with your deck also, and some of the decks really want to do that, you can get up towards 5, 6, 7 pieces of interaction. So if you're talking about synergistic removal, stuff like Chocobo Kick, this impressed, 1 and a green for a sorcery. Your creature punches, it reaches out, it deals damage. And then it's got kick or return a land to deal double equal to its power. And oftentimes you didn't need to double it, was my experience, but you just wanted to pick up a land. Whether that was, there's cool stuff you can do like picking up the adventure lands or the cycling land for some card advantage, or just to trigger another landfall for your chocobos for the turn. I was really impressed with that, despite it being a sorcery. And then Corner by Black Mages is another synergistic piece of interaction for the red-black deck. The 1BB sorcery, target opponent sacks a creature, and you make an 0/1 black wizard. That's bread and butter for the red-black deck.
And even against all of the tokens running around, like it still doesn't feel great to sacrifice your hero token under a job select equipment because of the steep re-equip cost. Like you don't feel like you're... I don't know, down a full card or anything like that, but it does impact your ability to enact your deck's game plan.
Correct. Like the Corner by Black Mages is a way to answer those job select cards and feel even. Like you get rid of their 1/1, they have to re-equip, but you've got this mage sticking around. So you're both kind of getting a little bit of upside still. Mm-hmm. But then there's a few premium removal spells that stick out. Ice Magic is one of them. That's the 1 and a blue instant. You can bounce for 1 and a blue, you can top or bottom for 3 and a blue, or you can Blazaga for whatever, 6 blue or something like that, to shuffle it in. That being able to interact at 2 mana or 4 mana is really big, and the 2 mana bouncing a lot of the tokens is huge. Like that was something I hadn't quite put together until actually playing with the cards, but the fact that you can bounce your opponents, that 3 and a blue 3/3 that flashes back and makes a 5/5, you can bounce that and answering that cheaply or bouncing the job select stuff. Ice Magic really gets there as premium interaction in the format.
Yeah, agreed with that.
And then there's Sephiroth's Intervention. This is another huge mover up for me. This is the 3 and a black instant, destroy target creature, you gain 2 life. Being able to point and click and kill a rare, I think, is something you're heavily interested in. The first copy of that is absolutely premium, I think. And the gain 2 life is also something you're interested in actively in the format, I think.
Yes, I agree with that for sure. Because, like, I mean, there's so many decks, whether it's the Mage's deck, you're certainly wanting to gain life against. But, you know, a lot of the beatdown decks, the white, any flavor of white, really, having that incidental life gain is awesome.
And then there's Vayne's Treachery. That's the 1 black -2/-2. And with kicker, sacrifice an artifact or a creature to give -6/-6 instead. I think that's, I want the first copy of Sephiroth's Intervention, I think, before I want the first copy of Vayne's Intervention, Vayne's Treachery. But then I think I want 2 Vayne's to 1's Sephiroth or something, if that makes sense. But both those are premium interaction for black. Thunder Magic is obviously insane. That's the red shock, 3 and a red deal 4 or 7 mana deal 6. That card's incredible, probably the best common in the format, or one of them for sure.
Yeah.
And then a couple uncommons in Battle Menu. That's the white card, 1 and a white instant. You can make a 2/2, gain 4 life, give something +0/+4, or blow up a creature power 4 or greater. That's premium. Overkill, the black 2 and a black instant, -9,999 to toughness. The interaction that's instant speed and efficient, you really are interested in the format.
I want to add one more to this list, which is Slash of Light, the one in a white common that deals damage to something equal to the number of creatures and equipment you control. In that white base deck that I had, this was nominally Doomblade a lot of the time, like deal six, deal seven, whatever, because your equipment is hanging around. Any job select thing adds two to this card's count, and it's two mana, it's instant speed. I think, so to your point of its synergistic removal and its instant speed and common, loved Slash of Light.
So questions for you on that, because the white removal is still a bit of a mystery to me. So these cards I listed off here, Ice Magic, the Intervention, Veins, Treachery, those things, Battle Magic, Battle Menu, Overkill, those I would see as very high picks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that white card. Like, I would put it more in the Chocobo Kick cornered by Black Mages category of not necessarily high pick, but good if you put it in the right home.
But I think I think any base white deck is going to be the right home for Slash of Light. Is, I guess,
because of the job select?
Yeah, I just think if you're playing white cards, if you're putting, you know, 9 or 10 planes in your deck, Slash of Light's going to be great. I think I'm still probably taking the premium job select things over it. Like, I don't think Slash of Light is ahead of Weapons Vendor or the good job select equipment in the way that these removal spells you've listed are sort of top of the heap in their colors respectively. But I just really liked Slash of Light.
And you think it's better than White Aurasite? Because that's another card I have a big question on, which is the 2WW artifact that exiles something. It's an O-ring effect and then can tap for a planes.
Yeah, we got our boy Samp telling us in the Discord. He was surprised that we left this off the discussions last week because it's basically Buried in the Garden, which is 2GW enchantment, take care of a non-land permanent, and like enchants a land and lets you tap that land for a mana of any color when you tap it. And so it doesn't fix the way Buried in the Garden does, but effectively it's the same otherwise. But yes, I would take Slash of Light in my base white decks over White Aurasite. Not saying that I think White Aurasite is bad. I was also just like, how many white commons am I allowed to talk about in one episode? Because I still think White Aurasite is good, but I think it is less premium than all the other things that white gets to do.
Sure. And then there's still, that's the thing about white's interaction for me. It's got those three interaction spells. It's got the one you like, the White Aurasite, and then there's still the four and a white.
Fate of anything. The Sunchrist. Yeah.
Yeah. Or -2 if it's targeting a tapped creature. Like, you have a lot of options for getting the job done in white.
Yeah. To the point of those three, in the conversation of those three, I would list them as Slash of Light 1, White Aurasite 2, and then Fate of the Sunchrist 3 currently. Like, Fate of the Sunchrist felt like a necessary evil at times. You're rarely getting to, like, yes, it's nice to have point and click, but it's 5 mana to do so.
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. Depression comes in many different forms. In fact, 6 million men in the U.S. suffer from depression every year, and it's often undiagnosed.
It's okay to struggle. Real strength comes from opening up about what you're carrying and doing something about it, so you can be at your best for yourself and everyone in your life.
Feeling like a lone wolf as a dad out in the world has been real for me. There aren't a lot of daytime dads out there during the week, and while my wife has multiple text threads with groups of moms, I didn't really have that for dads. So I started one a few months ago with a couple friends, and it's been really great to not only have a place to talk about the things I struggle with him, but to also celebrate the things that I'm proud of with him.
BetterHelp has served over 5 million people globally, and it's convenient. You can join a session with a therapist at the click of a button, helping you fit therapy into your busy life.
As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise.
Talk it out with BetterHelp. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/lords.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show.
For color power rankings, you can go
if
ahead
we can,
and
if we can get some flames around you and
the hot takes, and we'll just blur Ethan's face so that he's not associated with these in the YouTube video. So I think my overarching take about the color power rankings, which is unusual for me, is that they don't really matter, because I think all of the colors get good synergy and good power. But I think the thing I feel confident in saying right now for me is that I want to start red, and I have red ahead of everything else because I like where red goes towards all the other decks. I really think red black mages is strong. I played red blue a lot in early access. Love playing that deck. I think it's good. I'm here for red white. Although I think red white's heavier white than it is red, but if you start red, you have the option to, you know, move in there. And I think red green chocobos is real too. I think one of the things chocobos suffers from is it's its own thing in a format where there's a lot of overlap. Like, I think that's right. Where you're going to find the edges in the draft. Like, similarly, red black is its own thing without tons of overlap. But if you start red, then you can have red black, red blue, red white open. But if you start black and you're going for red black, it's hard to switch out of right. it. So I think finding all those connection points and understanding those connection points deeply is going to be really key for the format.
Well, red and white, I think still, like we said this last week, and I still feel this, red and white pivot the best. Like, there's the most overlap between the white cards that are good go in all the white decks, and the red cards overlap with themselves and then go in all the red decks. The thing you're talking about with black is like, and I felt this tension too, because I was like sort of in a draft going down the black spells thing. It's really hard to pivot into black green if you want to do that, because the black red deck wants different black cards than the black green deck wants.
Correct. Yes. Yeah,
which is it's tough tension. Whereas red doesn't ask you to do that. Red's like, hey, these are good cards, and they'll go. And because like my red job select equipment is good, it's going to go in red white. It's going to go in red blue because it's a non-creature spell. It's going to go in red black because it's a non-creature spell. And it's going to go in red green because you're going to have chocobos. Like, it just goes everywhere.
Speaking of cards that go everywhere, red has so many of those cards, but a card that I was impressed by, I was all about Call the Mountain Chocobo, and I still am. That card feels great to cast. The 3 in a red, make a Chocobo, get a land drop, and then you can flash it back for 7. It feels so good when you are missing your 5th land drop and you cast that card and go search up a mountain. It is a very good feeling. But a card I was impressed by that I was not expecting to be was the Warrior Sword. The 3 in a red, job yeah. select, make a 4/3. Like, that was just rock solid. And then, like, when you get into those grindy games, giving +3/+2 when you re-equip mm-hmm. is huge.
Another card I want to shout out in the Sahagin conversation was a card we didn't touch on, but I think if Sahagin is good, then this other card I think will be good, which is Blazing Bomb. But I didn't see this in play. I'm wondering if you did. Single red 1/1. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, if at least 4 mana was spent to cast it, you put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. And then it has the ability to tap sack at instant speed to deal damage equal to its power to target creature. Did you see this card?
We played it. I drafted it once, didn't play it, saw it once, wasn't that impressed. I think it's a little small ball and a little slow to get rolling.
Yeah. The 4 mana non-creature stuff really impressed me. Just like how doable it was. Like, I sort of had that in my head. Like, yeah, I see the flashback, I see the equipment piece of everything, but it really just felt like you could trigger that stuff every turn if you built your deck right.
Correct. And the fact that it gets 2 premium spells in Thunder Magic and Ice Magic that yes. can be cheaper also. It's not like you're making right. your deck yeah. clunky to do it. Your deck's still streamlined, but you also still get to trigger it whenever you want.
Right. Yeah. Really good point.
So color power rankings, for me, red's ahead of everything else. If I had to put them in an order right now.
And to be clear, you don't have to.
I don't have to, but I do. That's what the people are here for. They want to be able to say, you're dumb in the YouTube comments. I think I would go, I'm going to switch up what's in our show notes here. I think I would go red 1, black 2, green 3, white 4, blue 5. But I think it's all very close. And I think you, like, if we're normally we try to put a stamp on, like, this is a Jeskai format or whatever. I think if I had to pick a wedge right now that is this format, I think I would say it's a Jund format. But that's also horrifically reductive. But I think the Jund space, like red black being a premium deck and green black being a premium deck, and yes they take different black cards, but they're both very good. I think that's a nice place to be, but all the white stuff still works. Like, the red white's good, blue white's good. I really truly don't think the color rankings matter that much.
So I have a question for you, as you often say to me, so I have some questions for you. As I came into the crash course being really high on white, my one trophy in early access was a base white deck. The person who 3-0'd my at-home pre-release was a white red beatdown deck. I'm still really high on white. Why is it low for you in the power rankings?
I think it's still good. Like, I don't want you to come away from the power rankings thinking white is not good.
Don't give me a politician answer here.
Yeah. I'm thinking. I think white has moved down for me, and more than it is white moving down, it's that the other stuff has moved up. Like, okay. I was crazy impressed with red black, and I was crazy impressed with black green. Like, black green has the banger signposts, which is kind of like what we saw in Aether Drift. Like, black green had, we saw those like really powerful signpost park cards, but then the rest of the deck works, and the rest of the deck works even better here. Like, it's a synergy deck. Like, black green can also do the turbo self mill with the town greeters, and then you have, what is it called, the last days or the final days, that 2BB sorcery that makes two zombies. You can self mill that. It's kind of like spider spawning esque in that you can turbo self mill, flash that back, make six zombies or whatever. Like, pretty trivial, easy. There's a lot of different versions of black green that get there if you get the good uncommons and the enablers. So that deck has intrinsic power and really good synergy. And so I like red black has moved way up for me, and green black has moved way up for me. So I think that's why I have that wedge at the top of the color power rankings.
Okay.
But I do still see all the white stuff. I played white. I played against the job select stuff. I think white is very narrow in what it wants to do. It's very focused, which I think is a boon for it. But I also think once you start down white, you're playing white. Like, and I don't necessarily love that aspect of it if it's not the best. So going into archetypes that work, like normally we've got these in tier one, tier two, tier three. I think it all works. Like, I think all the archetypes get there for the most part. The ones that I'm sure that work, blue red, the four mana value stuff, definitely works. Green black, the graveyard stuff, definitely works. Red black mages, definitely works. The town stuff, we haven't talked much about towns. I think towns is real. The blue green X towns, it frequently is Sultai good cards with some town synergy. Like, I think that's going to be a very common archetype in the format. That works, and I think that's good. And I've seen in the Discord several comparisons of this format to Aether Drift. The thing this format reminds me the most of is Kaldheim, because you've got like the Snowland town aspect there too, and I think that's a big part of the format. I don't think it's quite maybe as premier as Snow was in Kaldheim initially, but it's definitely an archetype and it's definitely there. And I think out of weak packs or where you don't have a lane, I think you get rewarded for picking up the towns and leaving that open as an avenue to yourself. I was very impressed with towns. Like, I would view that as Sultai soup towns or something. And then blue white artifact synergy definitely works with a job select, and red white archetype with job select stuff definitely works. Of those six decks, I think red, black, and blue, red are the most linear of those decks as far as synergistically. And I really enjoy that type of deck, which is why I've got red as the top color for me. If I had to pick my top three decks, it would be those two, blue, red, red, black, and green, black would be the third in there. And I think that's also, you'd asked, why is white moved down for you? It's not that white's moved down. It's that it's not in those three archetypes, and that's currently what I would be viewing as the three archetypes I'm most excited to draft. Decks the jury's out on for me that I still do think work is blue black, because it just so frequently ends up as Sultai towns. Like, I think it's hard for blue black to have its own identity.
Yes, yeah, I feel that.
If that makes sense. Green white, I think you're going to be playing just a lot of cards and not tons of synergy. So green-white jury's out for me. Black-white, similarly, I think it's just worse than blue-white and red-white for the most part. It's hard for me to see what black brings to white that blue and red don't bring better. And then red-green, lastly. And I do think that gets there. Like, it hits hard, but I don't have enough to say for sure. Yeah, definitely red-green is in.
Yeah, red-green feels to me like a top archetype at the moment. I think it's just like, I just think it gets there and doesn't take a lot of work. So it doesn't feel like as fun synergistically in terms of like the puzzles you get to solve in the format, but it seems powerful to me.
Yes. And I think a lot of it is that side quests. Like, I think that's really in green red. And even those ones that the jury's out on, I feel very confident that red, green, and black, white are eventually going to get there. Blue, black, like we said, gets folded into Sultai. I think green, white is actually very interesting as a base for all the sideways stuff. Like, that's what I want to do with Green White, is the Green White
Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
The Green White Legends. Like, that's where Green White's going to land for me. And I think if Green White lands there successfully, like, yes, all about it as an archetype.
Yeah. That's what piques my interest about Green White currently as well.
But that's exciting to me. The fact that it seems like that's all I want from a format, that we're pretty balanced, that there's synergy everywhere, that the archetypes work, that you're going to find your lane. Like, I am in love with this format.
Yeah. Should we take a peek at one or two draft logs from Early Access to maybe chat about some individual cards?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, this is one of my drafts from Early Access here. I think this is one of my later drafts. So pack one, pick one. You see the following cards as options. Fairly flat pack here. So I'm going to shout out the blue-green town. Blue-green ETB tapped land. There's Vayne's Treachery. One in a black instant, -2/-2. Kicker, you can sacrifice an artifact or creature to give -6/-6 instead. There's Ice Magic, one in a blue for the instant, to bounce something, top or bottom, or Blazaga. And then there's, moving on to the uncommons, Capital City, colorless town that can filter mana through it or cycle for 2 mana. There's a black-white uncommon in Rufus Shinra, 1 white-black for a 2/4. When it attacks, if you don't control a creature named Darkstar, you make Darkstar, which is a 2/2 white and black legendary dog creature token. And I think that's it. Their rare is Earth Crystal. I don't think that's one of the crystals that get there. Some of them do. This is 2GG. Your green spells cost 1 less to cast. If 1 or more +1/+1 counters would be put on a creature, you get twice that many instead. And you can pay 4GG to tap it and distribute 2 +1/+1 counters among 1 or 2 target creatures you control.
For me today, on Sunday, June 8th, I would land on Vayne's Treachery out of this pack.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I selected Capital City because I think the pack is flat, and I don't want to pick a lane yet. Like, I am all about
delaying
the decision in this format, and I'm going to be happy with Capital City in any deck that I draft. And if I end up in towns, it's going to be extra good. I certainly think if black ends up being a color you want to start, you take Vayne's Treachery. If blue is the color you want to start, you take Ice Magic. I think if black-white ends up being a top archetype, you could start with Rufus Shinra and it wouldn't be crazy. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a lot of options, but I don't feel like I know yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I landed on Capital City. I think Vayne's Treachery is super reasonable too.
Okay, interesting.
All right, so we've got a Capital City. Pack one, pick two. See the following cards as options. There's a black-green town. There's a couple red commons in Warrior Sword. That's the 4/3 job select. And Mysidian Elder, that's the 1/3 that brings an 0/1 black wizard along with it.
Where are you at with this? With Mysidian
between
Elder
those two?
No. Like, you had your eyes on that card. I believe your phrase was two relevant bodies for a 3-mana 1/3 and an 0/1. So I'm curious if you've seen it, if you like it. I know, because you're super high on red black.
I do like it in red black. I think that's its home, and I think it's a good card there. I think it's worse than, for example, Cornered by Black Mages as a 3-drop. Mm-hmm. In that deck, but you're rarely, I think, going to cut it from a focused red black deck.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that it does have in red black is that it's a creature that makes the wizard. You really want non creatures to make the wizards.
Yeah, it sounds to me like it's not that good of a card.
It's not that good of a card.
All right, there we go.
It's not that good of a card.
There we go.
You win, Uncle. So there's also a couple good white commons in White Mage's Staff. That's the 2/2 that attacks and gains a life. With Job Select and Magitek Infantry, we should touch back in on this one. This is white for a 1/1, gets +1/+0 as long as you control another artifact, and you can pay 2 and a white to search up another Magitek Infantry out of your deck. Have you played with or against Magitek Infantry?
I have.
And?
I'm pro. I only had 2 of them in my deck, but I liked them a lot. And your point about them was, like, you're never, like, able to double activate, which is true. But a turn 4 play of play Magitek Infantry, search up Magitek Infantry is pretty good. And even the times, there were times where I drew my second copy before I could search it up, didn't even feel that bad because it's a 1-mana 2/1 and you've got ways to buff it with equipment. I'm still thumbs up on Magitek Infantry.
I'm also a believer in Magitek Infantry. I didn't play with it, but it was concerning playing against it. And I killed the first copy frequently.
Oh, yeah.
And often.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in on Magitek Infantry. I think it is lower. I still have Weapons Vendor as my top white common, though. I think it is the most important card to make the white decks work.
I think you're right about that, and I will co-sign that as a take.
Other things here, There's Chocobo Racetrack, 3GG for the artifact with landfall. Whenever a land enters, you make a Chocobo. There's Sleep Magic. I was woefully underwhelmed by Sleep Magic.
Really?
The enchantment taps a creature. The creature doesn't untap during its controller's untap step. And when the creature's dealt damage, you sacrifice this aura. Yeah, because it doesn't answer the saga creatures. Like, your removal not answering the rare saga creatures is really tough.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Okay.
Like, it's efficient. Don't get me wrong. But I would have it below Ice Magic, below, like,
yeah,
I would have it as not thrilled to play Sleep Magic as one of my four premium removal spells or whatever, you know.
Another card I want to shout out that's in this pack is Lionheart. It's 4-mana equipment. When it enters, it deals 2 damage to any target. Equipped creature gets +2/+1 and has an equip cost of 2. Have you played with this card yet?
I played with it in Sealed, and it was an absolute banger in my Sealed deck at the pre-release.
I feel like this card, like, is probably pretty good. I haven't seen it in play yet, but I feel like this card checks a lot of boxes for the format. Like, it's a 4-mana non-creature, it's an equipment, and deal 2? Like, there's a lot of 2 toughness things out there. It's not hard for this to pick something off and then be... And equip 2 is a relatively cheap re-equip cost in the format, you know?
It was great in Sealed. Well, the jury's out for me in Draft about how excited I am to play it, but it was very good in Sealed.
Yeah, it's unclear to me if it's like, this is flexible and really good, and so you'll take it highly, or like, no, part of its power is in its flexibility, and so it'll go in a lot of different decks, but you won't take it highly.
Sure. Well, and if you're interested in delaying the decision, it does that and goes in a lot of archetypes. Yeah, I could see it.
Right. Yeah. There's not really a clear pick to me this day. I mean, I'm sure after a few days of playing with the cards, I'll have more of a feeling of like the kinds of things I want to go after. But I think you could make a case for like Magitek Infantry. I think you could make a case for Chocobo Racetrack. I think you could make a case for Lionheart, the colorless equipment. Talk to me about the card you selected out of this pack.
I selected the Black Green Town for the reason you said, which is that I didn't really know what I wanted to go after. Like, both of these packs, there's been a lot of synergistic cards. There's been Vayne's Treachery. There's been Ice Magic. And those are just premium interaction spells as far as pack one. Here, there's good white cards in White Mage's Staff, Magitek Infantry, if you want to go down the white path. There's, I don't know. I think you're probably taking a white card here if you want to go down a path. I just don't think any of these are quite good enough to push me down a path. Like, I really, currently my view on drafting is I want to be shown, here is a route that you should leave open as an option to possibly go down. So none of the cards in these two packs have met like a power level threshold of pulling me into the color yet. Like, it's been a lot of really good synergy C pluses. And so for me, I want to be pushed down a path. So in the absence of that happening, I want to leave myself as open as possible. And I think to me, that's the town. And starting out with 2 towns means if I get towns cards, I'm hooked up. If not, and in the next pack, I see, I don't know, Titus Blitzball Star out of a weak pack, and then I can start to push down blue white artifacts. And will I be a little sad if I don't have Magitek Infantry or White Mage's Staff? Yes, but ultimately, I want to do whatever's open. Like, I don't want to force something that my neighbor might be drafting ahead of me. And I think starting with a white card like the power level of White Mage's Staff or Magitek Infantry is a recipe for that possibly happening.
Yeah, that checks for me.
So took the Black Green Town here, pack 1, pick 3, thrilled with that, because there's several good cards in the pack. This is by far the best pack we've seen, which is what I like, and you'll see when we go through the cards in this pack why I took towns out of the first 2 packs after listing the cards here. So cards in consideration, there's Suplex, like probably the best interactive spell we've seen so far. I don't know. This one's being sorcery is less good. Yeah, that's not true. Vayne's Treachery is better than this. So Suplex, 1 red sorcery, deals 3 to creature. If it would die, exile it, and you can also exile an artifact. You got to stop suplexing either the body or the equipment. Like, neither one of those is good. It's public service announcement.
Better to suplex the equipment, right?
But that's such a problem because they have so much of it. Like, you're getting rid of one doesn't solve the problem of later in the game them loading up 2 to 3 equipment on the one that's left over.
That's true. People, of Final Fantasy.
You gotta stop. Black Mage's Rod is here. That's the 2/1 that does damage for a non-creature spell. There's Weapons Vendor, the 3 and a white 2/2 at ETBs you draw, and you can re-equip for 1. And then in the uncommons, there's Ignis Scientia, 1 blue-green for the 2/2. You can look at the top 6, put a land card from among them onto the battlefield tapped, and then you can pay 1 blue-green, tap it to exile a target from a graveyard to make a food. That ability is also super relevant. Like, that life gain against red-black is huge for the Towns decks or the Sultai Soup decks to stabilize. And there's another good uncommon here in Magitek Armor. 3 and a white for the 4/4. It's got a crew cost of 1, and it makes a 1/1 on ETB.
Yeah, I loved Magitek Armor, but this is a dream Ignis Scientia for you after going town-town.
A dream Ignis Scientia for me. I agree, but all the cards, Weapons Vendor, Ignis Scientia, and Magitek Armor, I think are all better than the cards we saw in Packs 1 and Packs 2.
Yes, like if you had seen any of those three Pack 1, you'd take them over Capital City.
I think so. I might take Capital City Pack 1, Pick 1 over Magitek Armor still, but I would take both Weapons Vendor and Ignis Scientia over Capital City, yeah.
Yeah.
I think having that in your head, those types of cards that push you down a lane, like being willing to go after them aggressively and being willing to bob and weave aggressively is really important, while also at the same time, if stuff doesn't meet that threshold for you, I think you should do your best to delay decision, because the packs eventually will show you a lane. Like, that's my favorite part about this format, is that I feel like it's very hard to have a draft where you're like, there was just nothing I could do. I couldn't end up with a good deck. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think this format really does that to you if you know what's up.
Yeah. Well, and then your decision is being decided for you here, Pack 1, Pick 4.
Yeah, Pack 1, Pick 4, there's another Ignis Scientia, and it's off to the races from there. I'm base blue-green Towns, and we see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. This is the deck that I'm most excited about seeing what's up with.
It's very good. The Sultai Towns is strong.
Nice.
I think it is less good than focused green-black graveyard synergy, but all that stuff can kind of blur together too. Like, you might just have a Sultai deck that's got a Town Greeter and some modest graveyard stuff going on.
So just to underline for folks, as we go into draft number one on Tuesday online, like, you're hoping to be red if possible, start red if possible, but it just sounds like you're more hoping to read what's open.
That's all I want to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you should go wherever the draft pushes you and draft whatever deck the draft tells you to draft.
And are you at all worried about that as a focus point when other pick orders have not coalesced? Like, are you worried that reading signals is going to be hard because, like, how is this still in the pack when other people may not like that card as much as you?
Yeah, it might be messy early on, but I felt pretty clear about finding a lane in the early access drafts. And maybe it's not going to be that way the first couple days. That's still how I'm going to approach it, because that's how I want to approach it. But I do feel like that is ultimately, once pick orders settle, I feel like that's going to be a defining feature of the format, is that you should just draft what's open.
Yeah. And I think that is going to be certainly instrumental for me not tanking my win rate early on, because it's going to be so easy for me to see exciting sideways build rounds early and want to take them and go after them, when then pick 4, I see a signpost, or pick 5, see a signpost or a stream of secret gold cards, that then you're like, that's really what I should be doing. And you want to get into decks that way, not like brute forcing, like you were saying.
Yeah, so I think for example, I tried to draft a sideways legendaries build around during early access. I pack one, picked one, the Sarah Falon or whatever. It's the white green rare that makes your legendaries cost 2 less to cast, and then it flips if you have 3 or more legendary creatures on the battlefield. Ooh. To give your legends +2/+2. I was like, okay, great. Like, got this pack one, pick one. I know I'm gonna have it. Like, Blitzball legendaries, let's go. And I saw no Blitzballs the whole draft, and I ended up with like 6 or 7 legendaries and a really bad deck. Like, because I tried to do it from the get-go. Like, I think it's really dangerous in this format from your first few picks to lock in on something. I think this format really rewards you for, like, if you think about drafting as decision trees, you want as many paths open as possible, as long as possible in this draft format through pack one.
Yeah, and I'm sure next week we'll have like some more strong opinions about which archetypes are at the bottom of the barrel. But right now, I don't. Right now, I'm like, even stuff that I feel like a little less high on, like maybe black-white, I'm still like, I think black-white gets there, and maybe it'll get there more in a life gain or legends flavor of things. And that remains to be seen what that looks like. But I'm not feeling like I want to avoid or strongly push down anything. I just want to let the draft come to me.
Yes, I agree. All right, so let's take a look at another draft here. You want to do one of yours?
Yeah, let's take a look at one. So pack one, pick one. It's a slam dunk here because we got one of, if not the most busted rare in the set in Dion, Bahamut's Dominant. So that's the 3 and a white. 3/3 comes in with a 2/2 knight during your turn. Other knights you control have flying, and then it flips into a saga that wins the game. I don't need to bore you with that. If it weren't here, it's an interesting question. There's a Crossroads Village. That's the ETB tapped town. You pick a color and then it taps for that chosen color. There's a Town Greeter, 1 and a green, 1/1 ETB mill 4. May put a land from among them into your hand. If you put a town into your hand this way, you gain 2. There's Weapons Vendor. And then an uncommon to shout out in Vanille, Cheerful Lassie. That's 3 and a green, 3/2 ETB mill 2. Then return a permanent card from your graveyard to your hand and has the meld ability with the black uncommon. So if Dion's not here, what do you like out of this pack?
It's a really hard pick if Dion's not here to be able to answer like, yes, this is the pick now. I did do some melding during early access, melded several times. It's very good. It's not game winning on the spot, but it is very good if you get to meld. I think right now, today, I would take Vanille. I think that green black is better than the white equipments deck slightly, but I don't have strong opinions about that. Like, certainly could see taking Weapons Vendor here and either one being right in 2 weeks. I think both of those cards though are too good to delay the decision with something like Crossroads Village. Like, I think that would be a mistake. Like, I do want to delay the decision, but not to the point where I'm like not taking premier archetypal cards. And I think Vanille and Weapons Vendor are both premier archetypal cards. Now, I would be fine taking Vanille here, and if the next pack there's a Weapons Vendor, taking Weapons Vendor and then seeing, like, keeping both of those open and seeing which path to go down. Like, that's how I would be approaching it. Both, like, I think both Vanille and Weapons Vendor meet my power level threshold for specking into an archetype. And so, like, you just got to choose one here, and for me it would be Vanille.
Yeah. Yep. But we don't have to make that choice because we just get to take Dion here, which is busted, and try and push down white as hard as possible. Pack one, pick two. There are no commons that I think are in consideration, but I do want to chat about a card we haven't touched on yet, which is Vincent's Limit Break. This is the 1 and a black instant. It's tiered, and it's sort of the classic, like, if the thing dies, it comes back into play tapped with a twist. So until end of turn, target creature you control gains. When this creature dies, return to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control and has the chosen base power and toughness. So it's a tiered spell. So tier 0, it comes back as a 3/2. If you pay an additional 1, it comes back as a 5/2. And if you pay an additional 3, it comes back as a 7/2. I think this card's going to be good, is my take, because I think this effect is just generally good. And this with saga creatures is kind of gnarly.
Well, I have to back you up because the power and toughness change happens before it comes back. Like, this when you cast it, it turns it into a 3/2, a 5/2, or a 7/2, and then it comes back after trading.
Oh, so it doesn't come back with that base power.
Correct. Like, it's like a combat trick-esque up front, like to maybe try to make your thing trade up, and then it comes back as its own self.
Oh, that's like kind of even better than I thought it was.
It's different. It's definitely different.
It's different, yeah. I guess. Yeah. Because you can't use it on something big for just 2 mana.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Anyway, we're not taking it here. It's a card that I've got my eye on. But maybe it gets, like, it's really good with sagas, but less good with all the tokens running around. So I guess remains to be seen. This pick comes down to two, really just one card because of how powerful Dion is. If we go on to the uncommons, there's Summon Shiva, which is 3 blue-blue for a 4/5 saga creature. Chapters 1 and 2, tap something, put a stun counter on it, and then chapter 3, draw a card for each tapped creature your opponents control. And Ash, Princess of Dalmasca, which is 2 and a white for a 3/2 legendary. When it attacks, look at the top five cards of your library. You may reveal an artifact card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
Yeah, and there's also a rare here, Hope S theme, white blue for a 2/2 lifelink. This is what I was talking about, trying to do the Elixir Wombo combo with. At the beginning of your end step, each opponent mills X, where X is the amount of life you've gained this turn. That's not in consideration here, but I do think I would take Summon Shiva over Ash. I think the power level gap there is pretty big, and I think I want to take the best card out of the pack. I'm also fine to play white blue, and I think if you end up blue, not white, Dion's also exceptionally splashable as a single white pip. So I would take Summon Shiva here.
Interesting. I don't feel like the power level gap between Ash and Summon Shiva is that big. I think Ash is really good.
Just because Ash, if assuming you want to draft white job select, Ash is pretty good because it's going to get an attack in and then probably draw you a card.
Yeah, like I guess I just don't think that white job select seems redundant to me. That's what white does.
Yeah.
Like, that's what all of White's cards do. It's got Weapons Vendor. It's got Job Select cards. Like,
yes.
So, yeah, I just think Ash is really good. And you want to play White. You don't want to have to splash Dion. You want to play Dion.
I agree. I don't think it's crazy to take Ash. I just think I would take Shiva here.
Nah. I don't like that pick. I don't like that pick.
See me in 2 weeks.
I don't. Yeah, see me in 2 weeks. Okay, so I took Ash, as evidenced by my arguing here. Okay, pack one, pick three, some cards to discuss. We've got two legends and there's a blitz ball in this pack, so I got a little excited here seeing a blitz ball, knowing what I want to be doing. There's a card that I don't think is good. It's only white, or there's two white cards in the pack. Aerith Rescue Mission is 3 and a white sorcery. You can either choose to make 3/1/1 hero tokens or to tap up to 3 target creatures and put a stun counter on one of them. The one thing I want to shout out about this is that with Cid, which is the white blue signpost that gives stuff +1/+1 equal to the number of artificers you have in play and in your graveyard, that Cid anthems these 3/1/1s.
Yes.
Which is a pretty big wombination combination. The other white card in the pack is Wall of Omens, 1 and a white 0/4 defender ETB draw card, which like is fine, but doesn't necessarily actually do what white is doing best. Other cards in the pack that are good, probably the best card is Garland, Knight of Cornelia, black red for a 3/2. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, surveil 1, and then you can pay 3 black, black, red, red to return this from your graveyard to the battlefield transformed as a 5/5 flyer. What do you like here after taking, you take white card like me, what do you like?
Yeah, if you take Dion Ash, I like a card you haven't shouted, which is Torgol, a Fine Hound. 1 and a green for a 2/2. Whenever you cast your first human, it comes into play with an additional +1/+1 counter for each dog or wolf you control, and it taps for mana of any color. Both your creatures are humans right now, and this, I think, is how you start Blitzball Legends. I think you take Torgol, and you've got 3 legends. They're green-white, which I think is the best base for green-white legends, and then I think you try to wheel the Blitzball.
Okay. I like where your head's at. I like it. I could definitely see doing that. I did take the Blitzball, but it wasn't even on my radar to take Torgol and try and wheel the Blitzball here. And we should chat out Blitzball is the 3-mana manalith, taps for any color, and then you can sack it to draw 2 cards if an opponent was dealt combat damage by a legendary creature this turn, which is why we keep shouting out the legends. So I took Blitzball there. And then pack one, pick four, the only white card is Fate of the Suncrist. 4 and a white, instant, destroy a non-land permanent, costs 2 less to cast if it targets a tapped creature. But the best card in the pack, by far, is Thunder Magic, the tiered red shock to deal 4 to deal 8. Is there anything else in this pack you'd want to shout out?
No, this is Thunder Magic is far and away the best card here. You have to take it. I like cards to shout. Diamond Weapon is impressive. Just if we're shouting cards like an LR Crack-A-Pack style.
Yeah.
The 7/7 GG 8/8 costs 1 less for each permanent card in your graveyard. It's got reach and it's immune, so you prevent all combat damage that would be able to it. My opponent played one of these and I was like, what am I doing? And I did have, luckily I had Realm Sketching to copy it, and so our Diamond Weapons just kind of stared at each other for a long time. That Realm Sketching is a mover up for me. It's the 2 blue sorcery that copies an artifact, creature, or something.
Land.
Maybe? No, I can't copy it. Oh, land, yeah. But it that being able to copy the rare creature sagas as a way to not get like horrifically owned by them, as like you can copy your opponent's own rare saga, that's nice. So I've been impressed by Realm Sketching.
Yeah, I like
the Diamond Weapon. I mean, Black Mage's Rod is a good card to shout, but it's not in consideration here versus Thunder Magic.
Yeah, Diamond Weapon is that. Now that's something you want to suplex.
That is something you want to suplex. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so took Thunder Magic here, ended up getting deep into white in this draft. Magitech Armor, pick 5, the 3 and a white 4/4 brings a 1/1 token. Got a Weapons Vendor, pick 6. Magitech Infantry, pick 7. So I was able to get deep into white and then sort of figured out what of the colors that were open otherwise. Like, had some red cards, had some green cards, ultimately decided to go white-red with this path.
You wheeled a Weapons Vendor back 1, pick 9. That is ridiculous. I mean, that sort of stuff's going to be happening. Like,
it's definitely going to happen
in week one. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Yeah. I'm a lucky boy. What can I say?
You are a lucky boy. All right. Anything else before we go here? Anything you want to get off your chest about this format?
No, I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm excited to see if I don't think I'll be able to get to your level of excitement for this. I'm not sure. I feel like it's part summer break, part Final Fantasy nostalgia is trickling in for you, and that's great. That's what the people want.
It's not Final Fantasy nostalgia for me at all. I legitimately see this as all-timer potential for me. I don't know about like GOAT status. It would take a lot to unseat Ikoria for me because there's no companion type stuff, but this checks if it is the way I'm viewing it right now, which is that I'm viewing it as a very balanced format, a very synergistic format. A format that rewards finding your lane in the draft. Like, if it's all of that stuff, like, I can already tell I like the gameplay patterns. I like the cards. I like the build arounds. I'm like, this is any new format I'm excited about, but I'm jonesing for this format. So play the pre-release. And on Saturday, I had like 6 hours to kill. in Evansville, I had a rehearsal in Evansville Saturday morning, and my girlfriend was out kayaking, but then we had a game night plan with one of her couple friends Saturday evening. So I had 6 hours to kill. Golf plans fell through, and I was like, oh, maybe I can get in on a Saturday afternoon pre-release. So I kid you not, I like pulled up Google. I called like 12 LGSs in the Evansville area trying to find one that had like a 12 or a 1 start time, but they had all started at 11 a.m. and I was like, I was so depressed that I couldn't get in a Saturday pre-release in Evansville also. But yeah, I am here for this format. I'm gonna be drafting all day Tuesday. Like, I am in. My Final Fantasy looks amazing to me. I'm very excited. Cannot say enough good things about this format going into it.
Great. I won't try and top that. We'll see y'all next week.
See you all next week. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. Ben, will we have an updated tier list for the folks out there?
We will. It's in progress. I've got white, blue, and black done. I've been dragging my feet, so I got to finish red, green, and the legends. But it will be up before Tuesday.
Okay, so tier list up there, Patreon page info if you want to check that out, our Twitch stream links, our YouTube channel links. If you're not watching the podcast on YouTube, give us a follow. All that stuff is available at lordsoflimited.com.
Yeah, and live show in Vegas, we should shout that out again towards the end of the episode. If you're in Vegas, come check out the live show, 5:30 p.m. on Friday, and come draft with us if you're available on Friday. The PTQ is already sold out, and if you were hoping to do that and you want to get in some good magic instead, come draft 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. There'll be a link in the show notes where you can register for those drafts.
Yeah.
If you got any feedback for the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.